You can find me on Studio B every Thursday, 1700 hours Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. No topic taboo, no subject too strange. I strive to take a neutral standpoint during the dissection of the topic at hand. That's Reality Extraction with Mr. Rowe on Revolution Radio.
Good day, wherever you are in this world. I hope you're having a great day here listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
Confuse dissent with disloyalty. We must remember always that accusation is not proof, and that conviction depends upon evidence and due process of law. We will not walk in fear one of another. We will not be driven by fear into an age of unreason if we dig deep in our history and our doctrine. And remember that we are not descended from fearful men, not from men who feared to write, to associate, to speak, and to defend the causes that were for the moment unpopular. We can deny our heritage and our history, but we cannot escape responsibility for the results. We proclaim ourselves, indeed, as we are, the defenders of freedom wherever it continues to exist in the world. But we cannot defend freedom abroad by deserting it at home. Cassius was right. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. And goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're ready, because straight from downtown Columbus, Ohio, it is time for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
Holy smokes, it's Monday. What are we doing here? Yeah, it's Liberation Nation, This is Dude Guy, in the absence of your hero and mine, Deacon John. Yeah, he's a lawyer. He's working, you know, got to pay the bills, I suppose. And it's Monday, so I guess that's the best day to work overtime. So, yeah, it was a weird weekend. A lot of, I tell you, the news is getting stranger. Yeah, stranger. Every day, but you got to hang in there. On some fronts, things are, I don't know if I can say improving. Can I say improving? I don't know about that. But I guess things got to get worse before they get better. I guess I could put it that way, because if they don't get worse, they can't get better, because the globalists have designed a certain pathway. You could call it a suicide chute, you know, for us to all go down, a slavery pen they all want to herd us into. And yeah, the path, the trip will be smooth until the gates behind us lock shut with our QR code and our chip and our vaccine passport and our annual jab. But if we rock the boat, if we tip over the apple cart, if we wipe that smirk off Klaus Schwab's face, yeah, the earth will shake. The sky will split. The lights may go out. Things are going to go wrong for them. They are in control of many of the institutions and infrastructure of society. That means there's going to be disruption if we don't cooperate with our own enslavement, which we don't want to do. So, yes, there's going to have to be big trouble in Little China if we want to get out of this jam. So, Let me also mention before we get going on this Monday, August 29th. August 29th, we are on the verge of September and coming into, was it Kenny Loggins, the Danger Zone? We're getting into the, right into the Danger Zone. If anyone's seen the Top Gun Maverick movie, we're kind of echoes of 80s yesteryear. Yes, we're going into the Danger Zone. Election season, flu season, and increased energy demand season for all of us. Hoping the power grid continues to function, hoping we can afford it. Many uncertainties loom ahead of us, including will the election even take place? Will it have a shred of validity to it? We know there's going to be cheating. The question is how much, and will the demo commies be unable to install all of their henchmen to maintain control of Congress? Or if the Republican majority is installed, will the Rhino leadership still collaborate with the Democrats and make it a hollow victory? Difficult to say. But we will try to press them. The more that we press them, it's like I said, it's going to shake things up, but it's going to prevent things down the road, especially I think next year is going to be tough, a tough one. But if we throw them off their game, that means it's going to give us more latitude in making it the best we can without their plans fully being realized against us. So, oh yeah, I was going to remind everyone, this is Liberation Nation, Revolution Radio. You know it's listener supported, so go to freedomslips.com and make a donation to keep Liberation Nation and all the other fine shows and hosts on the air bringing information to you. So what have we got going on today? Well, we have spent a lot of time lately, and I know maybe it's too much. Maybe it's beating it over the head a bit, but we've just kind of been going over the necessity, the supposed necessity for the big switch to electric vehicles, to green energy, to the validity of the carbon dioxide problem that the Democrats claim necessitates, requires us morally to switch over and give up our gas-powered infrastructure, gas and diesel, our internal combustion engine infrastructure, in exchange for a rather creaky, a rather, let's say less reliable, more expensive, non-domestically manufactured, since most of those green technologies are manufactured in China or other parts of Asia, and many of the raw materials come from all over the world, really, but not here. So it's really taking us off domestic energy supply and domestic transportation manufacturing and outsourcing that. And I would say to anyone who's in favor of that, think about the 1990s when we outsourced a big chunk of our manufacturing to Mexico and to China in the first place. We began all that open free trade under Clinton and NAFTA. First it was NAFTA, then it was the World Trade Organization normalization of China and sending all those jobs abroad. I mean, a lot of people could say it really started with Japan in the 1960s when we outsourced our electronics industry to Japan, which we did, starting with optics. People remember the Nikon cameras and how good they were. And it's not to say that the Japanese don't make a fine product. They do. But we manufacturers are really encouraged to move their plants and or to China, to Japan in that case, or sell to them. But it there was you know, starting in the 60s, all types of electronics. They used to make a lot of electronics here in Michigan. We had something called Argus Camera in Ann Arbor here. And that persisted up until the late 80s, but eventually a lot of that was either moved to Japan or bought up directly by other defense contractors, because not only did they make cameras and optics for commercial devices, but they made heads-up displays and other optics for helicopters, for military helicopters. I forget which ones. But, you know, so it puts the whole country at risk to do these things, besides weakening our economy and giving all this technology to our enemies or potential enemies. I mean, look at how it has strengthened China to the point where China is actually threatening our own national security. And at the least threatening of our allies. It's become a rising expansionist power. It's maintained its communist government. And you know, the whole argument about, oh, well, if we open up and include China, they'll become more like us. Well, it seems like we're becoming more like them, actually. And we're the poorer for it and the more threatened. So whoever the genius was behind that argument, yeah, he should be tarred and feathered. I never believed any of this stuff. And I know it's easy to say that now, but I never did. I was always against it. And I will admit, in the first time, when was it? I guess I did. I was old enough to vote for Clinton one time, and I did, because I didn't like, what was it, Dukakis? Yeah. And that's just when I was figuring out. Was it 96? Yeah, so it's just when I was figuring out that, yeah, the Democrats were big, big-time liars and that Ross Perot was right about a lot of things, and that the Republicans – I mean, I never liked Poppy Bush, although I didn't really realize how bad he was until – you know, I guess a lot of my real realizations is just what – situation we really were in happened in the late 90s. I had really been doing a lot of research, and not long after that 96 election, I really, I guess that was my awakening. That was my big, big awakening. It was gradual, and then it was all of a sudden. It was gradual since a few years before that, and it was all of a sudden. But, you know, so I don't berate anyone who is on their own journey, but make sure you take that journey. Make sure you do not just settle for where you are now, especially if you're a young person. Don't be one of these young people who thinks they got it all figured out when they're 18 years old, because I guarantee you don't. Doesn't matter if you're going to Harvard or MIT, you don't have it all figured out. Life experience is crucial. And if you don't have a bit, some skepticism about the opinions of others and your own, you're going to learn it the hard way. You can't always trust yourself, and that you got to be able to reevaluate your opinions pretty much daily. Not that you have to change your mind, but reevaluate. What's a popular expression? Check yourself. Check yourself. Nothing wrong with that. No shame in that. We check our cars. We check. You check in on your kids. You check a lot of things. You got to check yourself. Pride goeth before fall. And so if I make a strong argument, let's say, it's because I have checked myself. I have done a lot of reading and preparation, but I'm prepared for a counter argument. In fact, I invite them. I like them, especially, you know, well-constructed ones. And that means putting some effort into it. No soundbite repeating from television. I don't do that, and I don't want to debate anyone who does that because it's a waste of time. I'm not talking about an emotional argument where we insult each other, which is the kind of arguments that Democrats like to have, because they don't go anywhere and they don't reveal anything. You want to have fact and based arguments, and not Facebook facts, but facts that are related to each other and build into a specific hypothesis or thesis or set of conclusions that has some type of value in the argument besides ad hominem insults, but actually illustrates something that is otherwise not very clearly delineated by the current thinking. So that is the true purpose of debate, to actually reveal the truth. Through rhetoric and logic, rhetoric has appeal to emotion. It is vital, but if you're all rhetoric and no logic, that is, we got too much of that today. And the appeal to emotion is where people who do not have a logical argument to offer are going to go. If you have a totally logical argument, it might be the best argument in the world. But if people can't relate to it, they can't relate to it themselves, or they can't connect to it and feel the kind of the meta narrative to it, and then the first person relation to their lives, it's very hard for them to become passionate about it, to internalize it, to make it part of their own philosophy. So you need really both logic and rhetoric to attract and inspire followers who don't just repeat what you say, but are willing to consider your ideas. Excuse me. These marketing calls happen. Okay. So, oh boy. Well, this speech has gone on long enough. So the news today. I know I was going to talk about energy, because we've dealt with a lot of lies about energy lately. And, you know, I hate to, well, I don't hate to be the one who says I told you so, but I want to say more than I told you so. I don't just want to say that. And I know a lot of people out there who listen to the show already agree with the points I'm making about electric power, or not electric power, renewable electric power. Of course, we like electric power, but power generation from solar and wind is very, very unreliable, very expensive, very polluting still, and a lot of the manufacture of the components doesn't take place in this country. And it's just not a good deal. I mean, we've gone through illustrating how much it costs to replace like a battery in an EV Ford Focus, which they don't make anymore. But it was one of the first electric vehicles that Ford did make. And I think somebody had like a 2015 Ford Focus, and they bought it secondhand, and the battery was getting weak, so they wanted to take it to get replaced. They had bought the car secondhand off, I think, a dealer lot for $11,000. When they went to the dealership to get a new battery, they were told a new battery would cost $14,000 in a used car. So really, I mean, what is the point? You already have a used car chassis that's going to require other repairs. I mean, even if you don't have a gas-powered engine, you got brakes, you got the suspension, you got other things that, as the car goes on in miles, you're still going to have to fix. Even the electric motor can have problems. And, of course, the battery can have problems. Even when you buy a new battery, stuff can happen to it to destroy it. Depends on how you charge it. In fact, even rapid charging, those batteries like the Tesla stations, I'll tell you something, it ruins the battery. It ruins the battery a lot faster to do the rapid charging. So the whole pitch about, oh, electric vehicles can be rapid charged, which still takes time. Rapid charging, you know, I'm not exactly sure how fast it is. I think it depends on the vehicle, on the battery. It's faster, but it's still way longer than your typical stop to fill up for gasoline. You know, a lot of those, sometimes I can get in and out in less than 5 minutes filling up a gas. maybe just about 5 minutes. I mean, so it doesn't take too long. I don't have to, if you don't have to go up to the window, you can just pay from the pump, get in and out, say 5, 6, 7 minutes tops. You know, EV vehicles, if we're not even talking about waiting in line, if you don't have to wait in line, which let's remember, there's not a lot of charging stations, not like gas stations, and there's not likely to be for quite some time. So if a bunch of more EV vehicles get on the road, you're likely to be waiting in line. And I know typical for full charging for a lot of these vehicles is pushing 2 hours, sometimes more. These are trickle charging. Now with rapid charging, I think it's still for a full charge between 30 and 45 minutes. And it's harming your battery. And again, once the batteries get damaged and you want to go buy a new one, they're not cheap. And we'd said, I mentioned the $14,000 battery for the, I think, 2015 Ford Focus electric vehicle, which is, again, it's no longer made. Okay, they got other EVs now. Say, oh, that was an older one. Okay, well, let's talk about a current car, the Chevy Volt. The Chevy Volt, and again, it's a nice-looking car. I have no complaints about how it looks. I actually knew someone who worked where they're made, because I think they're made here in Michigan. I believe, at least they were. I believe they are still made here. And so I know people work on them here. I mean, I have nothing against that. But again, it's still got to be a good car, and it's still got to be a good value. And part of the value of a car is being able to resell it. It's secondary value on the used car market. Well, if, you know, a typical gasoline engine, everyone knows, can last for 200,000 or 300,000 miles. That's years and years of service if taken care of properly. I've had a couple cars in my life that I've gotten up to almost 200,000 and sold them as secondary vehicles. I just kept them the whole time. I got one right now I'm probably going to keep because I really like it. I'm in the process of buying it. And I'm probably just going to keep it after it's paid off and lease something, lease a truck or something, and just keep my secondary vehicle. And then maybe one day trade it in or sell it, and it'll still have value. But these electric cars with the battery cost, it doesn't look like they're going to have any value. You're just going to have to turn them in the dealer. You might even have to pay to turn them in because of the cost of battery disposal and recycling. So a car no longer becomes an investment. It's a drain. You got a loan on it, or you got a lease on it, and it's just a cost. You can never own it. It's not worth it to own it, because as soon as you own it, the battery is going to be no good, and then it's going to be like buying two cars to replace the battery. Well, that, to me, that's no accident. They don't want you to have anything of value. Remember Klaus Schwab said you will own nothing and like it? Yeah, because they're going to make this planned obsolescence technology so crummy, you won't want to own a car. It'd be too costly. And believe me, they're going to try to do that with homes too. You won't want to own a home. They're going to make it too costly, too difficult. Don't worry, they'll take care of it all for you. They got your whole life planned out for you. You won't have to do a thing. But yeah, so this Chevy Volt, let me get to the punchline here. Here's a on Citizens Free Press today. They've got the receipt. At least an estimate at, was it Roger Dean Chevrolet? So that is right here, I believe, in Michigan. I've heard of that. So it's somewhere around here. The cost to get a new battery for a Chevy Volt is, let's see, $29,842.15. Yeah. Oh, no, that's in Florida. Okay. So Roger Dean. Yeah. Roger Dean Chevrolet. So that's in Florida. It's almost $30,000 to replace a battery in a Chevy Volt. I mean, that is insane. Insane. I didn't even pay that for my car a couple years. I bought it. I was leasing it for a couple of years, but the purchase price, it had gone down a little bit. It wasn't even 20 grand by that time. For a car that just had like 40,000 miles on it, nice car. Now they want 30,000 just to buy a damn battery. It's crazy. And I've heard those batteries last basically 3 years. So every 3 years you got to pay $30,000. That's $10,000 a year for a battery. That's nuts. And it's not clean. Batteries are some of the dirtiest things around. Difficult to dispose of. They're very toxic in many ways. People who think this stuff is green are crazy. Crazy. And a lot of people are starting to echo or amplify or at least agree with my comments on, you know, the drive to eliminate. I'm not going to call them fossil fuels because they're not fossil fuels. They're hydrocarbons. Nothing fossilized about them. They're made in the earth, not by dead dinos. They're made by heat and pressure and of water and minerals that create long-chain hydrocarbons deep in the earth. So one person who agrees with me is Elon Musk. And, you know, I guess he's a lot of people's favorite billionaire, possibly a globalist. He's kind of flips back and forth between globalist and anti-globalist. To me, that's a somewhat practice profile he likes to project. But it's still useful when some people follow him to quote him, because he's kind of, I think Steve Bannon calls him the Thomas Edison of our age. And even if he doesn't really invent a lot of these things like Thomas Edison did, who really did invent a lot of things, and, you know, he also stole some stuff as well from other people, but he did invent a lot of the things too. Elon Musk fills that role, and he is at least runs his businesses fairly well, and he talks a good game. And in this case, he recently said that the world needs oil and gas or civilization will crumble. And he told this to reporters in a press conference in Norway today. He said that while sustainable energy sources should be developed, the world must continue to extract oil and gas in order to sustain civilization. You would think greenies would have realized this quite a while ago, but they're living la-la liberal land. So, yeah, they need people like Elon Musk to tell them this. Okay, we made it to the break. We'll get to more news and headlines after the break. This is Dude Guy for Liberation Nation. See you on the other side.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
This is David Dungeon from Shiny Side Out. You're listening to Revolution Radio. And now we return you to Liberation Nation with Deacon John.
Thank you. Thank you for the applause. I appreciate it. Yeah, this is Dude Guy back from break. And we're going to go right into the news. Just remember to donate to Liberation Nation. Donate to freedomslips.com. Keep us all on the air. And we appreciate all our listeners. You know, we're still on the air, so you're doing your job. We appreciate it. Thank you. So now, electric vehicles, expensive, not so green, give you range anxiety, and not able to be an investment, so that you have, you know, something to show for all that expense. And, you know, a lot of people have pride of ownership. Some of these cars have become classics and get more valuable. I mean, heck, how much do you think, like, a 68 Mustang, you know, GT, or, well, not back then, it was GT, a 68 Mustang Boss or whatever is worth now? I mean, for a lot of people, that's, like, one of the ideal cars. And others, an old Vet. I mean, I don't see anybody getting excited about old electric vehicles because they don't last. There's nothing. It doesn't even feel like they got a real soul to them, you know. To me, anyway. You know, there's something about internal combustion engine. It just feels like the vehicle has a personality. It has its own life to it. You know, not a scary, you know, Christine life like a la Stephen King, but, you know, I guess maybe you have to be a car enthusiast, but, I've ridden a couple electric vehicles. They're not bad, but to me, they kind of feel like golf carts. You know, they get you where you want to go, but, not really in a fun way. You know, that just may be my generation. But these other factors that I'm listing are real things to consider, and they may even be engineered into the whole, you know, infrastructure of these things to make sure that you just won't get anything for your money when it's all said and done. So let's go over part of this plan in the Build Back Better and the promotion of electric vehicles is you know, promoted by the Biden White House, and it has been analyzed by oilprice.com. And so what they say in this article called The Flaw in Biden's Electric Vehicle Charger Plan is they go over a few points here. One of them is that in their legislation, the Biden administration is giving $5 billion to states with EV charging infrastructure plans. But retailers are worried that government money for EV charges may mute private investment. Yeah, if the government's going to pay for it, why would I invest in something that, you know, I'm going to lay out my own private money, but the government's going to pay for my competitor to build something, and then he's instantly going to be able to make profits while I got to pay back my loans, I won't be able to compete. He'll be able to have instantly lower costs and drive me out of business. So really, that's a promotion to the insiders who are going to be qualified for those government earmarks. Probably the same company the Pelosi's have invested in. So they're going to be guaranteed to be the winners in any competition. It basically destroys capitalism unless the process was fair, which we know it's not. You know, they want to pick the winners. That's part of their new game. So, they're trying to promote more EV charging. What they're saying here in this article is that there's no way to build out the infrastructure that's needed to charge vehicles without private investment. To do it with just public money, it's not going to happen. So it's going to lead to a small spurt in government-funded investment, but it's going to drive away the private investment that would really have to fund a large rollout of EV chargers. So in a way, I mean, maybe that's good because they're killing their own plans from being practical for most people, because with the limited range of these EV vehicles, you need a lot of stations. You can't be far away from one for too long, especially on a hot day, or if you're towing something, you could easily be run out of power. And I'll tell you, I think it's going to become a lot more common if and when, you know, a good number of electric vehicles on the road. I think you're going to see a lot more of them by the side of the road. And there's going to have to be like special recharging vans that come by and get people going again. Probably diesel-powered trucks, too. They have built-in diesel generators like tow trucks, you know. So the gas-powered cars are going to have to come and save the little toy electric cars. That's real green, right, greenies? You like that, right? So, and they go through a few other things you know, this $5 billion is going to, you know, drive away the investments. And, you know, this also doesn't take into account that in states like Montana, you know, Utah, Wyoming, New Mexico, Colorado, there's lengthy stretches of empty road where you'd have to install EV chargers out in the middle of nowhere where there's no infrastructure, there's no electric line. And so many vehicles just won't be able to traverse the long stretches of road. I have driven across South Dakota, Wyoming, Nebraska. There are long areas where, I mean, let's say you just stick to the highway. That's bad enough. If you went off the highway, good luck. You know, no more getting lost in a small town like a lot of those old 50s and 60s movies. You wouldn't even make it that far in an EV. You're just going to be on foot. Not with any of the technology that they're promoting right now. And so their plans are just doomed to leave a lot of people stranded on the road by the way they're trying to roll it out. And I just think people really need to think about this. Elon Musk has thought about it. He's saying we still need oil and gas. And yet you've got 100 banks that have gotten together and made a commitment statement to the UN Net Zero Banking Alliance. That's carbon net zero. And so they're pledging to transition their lending portfolios to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and reach net zero emissions by 2050 or sooner. And so that's 100 major global banks that are going to direct their lending and investments to carbon capture and other net zero infrastructure, and that's going to be taking it away from oil and gas infrastructure that we need, driving up the cost of oil and gas that we still need, that Elon Musk says we still need, that anybody with a brain can see that we still need. And so today, you can see oil and gas prices are going up again. And that's because OPEC is outside of, they just had a big conference in Jackson Hole, a lot of the central bankers, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and OPEC has announced they're probably going to be restricting supply in the near future, and the Fed has continued to raise interest rates and do quantitative tightening. So well, you will have some demand destruction, and that's what's brought oil prices, you know, gas prices down a bit, is that people are just using less because they can't afford it. So that has in turn brought the price down a bit. But we don't have more production, and the production, small production increase we got from OPEC is going to go away because OPEC is announcing they're going to be turning down their production a bit. Because they're probably anticipating prices are going to go higher later. So why did they want to support lower prices? They don't. They're an oil monopoly. They want to get as much of their oil as they can. And if it hurts you, they don't care. That's why domestic production is so important. It's leverage against these oil cartels all around the world, greenies and liberals. So just remember how you're hurting poor people who rely on oil and gas and coal to heat their homes, to power their vehicles so they can get to their jobs. And there's only so much money to pay for all this stuff. The more money we pay foreign oligarchs for oil, gas, coal, everything else, less we have to help people out here. So there really should be domestic production sufficient for our needs and to allow economic growth. And if we figure out EV vehicles or something else, great. We'll have money to invest in it and build it out instead of borrowing it from China. So these things, these transitions don't happen just when you want them to. They happen when the economy can accommodate them and when the technology is ready to be deployed at a price and with a performance profile that will fulfill market demands. That's capitalism, kids. It's not a game. It's reality. And it has got us this far. Let's continue to use it. That's my advice. Forget communism. It goes nowhere but down. Okay. So I got some more articles about EV, but I want to get to some other topics. There's an article real quick here that says, like, if you think we can make electric vehicles in America, like even the batteries, we haven't been allowed to do the mining here. So most of it's all going to come from abroad. China is number one because they don't care about the environment in China, greenies. They just, you know, mine everything. Just like in the Congo, they mine for lithium and everything they need in China. And if people die or if there's pollution, they don't care. It's communism. Who's going to file a lawsuit against the government in China? I tell you who's going to file a lawsuit against the government of China. Someone who's soon to be dead or in a concentration camp. So it's not going to happen. So yeah, they do whatever they want. So here where you've shut down everything and you force it to, because of your green agenda, it just forces it to buy things from abroad until we can't afford to buy them anymore. So if you really want electric vehicles, it'd be smart to allow more mining and industrial production to take place of the materials that are needed. And mining is driven, unfortunately, not by electric equipment, but by diesel equipment. So you better get some more refineries to power that diesel equipment and the trucks to ship all that heavy ore by train and truck to the factories that are powered by oil and natural gas to make your green electric vehicles, greenies. See how that works? You may learn. We'll see. We'll see. Okay. So I know a lot of people are following the Trump drama, and it continues to develop. We saw the affidavit be released, heavily redacted, and then they're trying to claim that the libtards are trying to claim that it's all over for Trump. We're gonna indict him and da 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 da. But a lot of people, and I don't know why, because I looked at the affidavit. Most of it is, or about half of it's all redacted. But you've got some analysis of it that says, and I didn't see anything in it that was even that revealing, other than the timeline, which kind of proved that Trump had been working with them all along, and that the request was not based on nuclear documents or something crazy like that. In fact, it wasn't even based on the idea that he had possession of classified materials. It was more about the national Archives Administration wanting just some general paperwork. I'll go through it right here in this article. Which is from the Epoch Times, where the ex-FBI intel chief says the Department of Justice has no case against Trump. Again, this is from the Epoch Times. So I'm going to read from some of it directly here because they say it better than I could. So a former assistant director in the FBI said he believes the affidavit used to obtain a search warrant of former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence reveals the government has no case against him. Quote, we now know why the DOJ wanted the affidavit, which is supposed to articulate the probable cause needed for a legitimate search. They wanted it to be kept under seal, wrote Kevin R. Brock, the former assistant director of intelligence for the FBI. The holy and sanctified FBI. Was he a liar, liberals? Oh, no, he's from the holy and sanctified FBI, so he must be telling the truth. And he was the principal deputy director for National Counterterrorism Center. So he published this in an opinion piece yesterday. The affidavit was ordered released by a U.S. magistrate judge last week in response to court filings submitted by media outlets and third parties. The legal document, however, was heavily redacted and revealed very little about what the FBI agents were searching for on August 8th and why. Quote, first Brock wrote, this is the FBI guy, the affidavit confirmed that the FBI's investigation was triggered in January 2022 at the request of the National Archives, which wanted certain documents, especially classified documents, that it considered to be presidential records to be turned over to it by Trump. But there appears to be nothing in the affidavit asserting a refusal by Trump to cooperate. So no refusal. There's nothing in there that says he wouldn't give it to him, just that they hadn't worked it out yet. We're talking about 15 boxes. We don't know the size of the boxes, but that's a lot of documentation to go through. Trump does have other things to do. It can take time to work these things out. We know that they were communicating. We know the FBI had been there on June 3rd and a couple of other times before that, I think, and had taken some documents. So it's not as if nothing was happening or that Trump wasn't cooperating or that at the time they came, they said, hey, if we have to come again, we're going to break your door down. They didn't say that on June 3rd. So he continues, second, from what I have seen, I don't believe the affidavit articulates how federal law was or is being broken. So it doesn't say any laws are being broken in the affidavit, which that's part of probable cause. You're saying, hey, a law is being broken. Someone's been injured. Something's been stolen. We have reason to believe a law has been broken. You're supposed to cite a law that you're getting a probable cause that this law has been broken. Well, he doesn't see that in the dang affidavit. And so he also says, for those who hold out hope that the affidavit's redacted sections fill that gap, there is almost no chance that they do. So they say in the article, the legal documents probable cause arguments only deal with half of what is needed to show a possible violation of a federal statute that is cited in the warrant, Brock wrote, adding that based on his experience, it's unlikely the government will release more of the redacted portions. So let's just go over how you can get a warrant. In order to obtain a warrant, it's not sufficient for an affidavit to only argue that there is a cause to believe a crime has been committed. In this case, that Trump had allegedly classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. He said the unredacted portions do not make the case that Trump wasn't authorized to have the documents. So not only does it say that he has, documents that he shouldn't have, it doesn't even try to make the case that he's not allowed to have them. It's just crazy. So he says, quote, a criminal violation of those statutes about records, National Records, Presidential Records Act, I think, a criminal violation of the statutes only exists if it can be established that the person being investigated wasn't authorized to possess, store, transfer, or copy of those documents. He's the president. These are presidential records. He's not the janitor. He's allowed to have his own records. He's allowed to declassify them. He was the damn president of the United States when he did it all. And this has been like 19 months going on that he's had him. It was such an incredible danger. How could this have been going on for 19 months? And then you have to have a raid because the end of the world's coming there. So far they've cited no proximate event that was about to happen. that they had to go do this. Just that, oh, he had some paper. So, yeah, he said, you can easily establish that somebody isn't allowed to have presidential records except against one person, the president. You can't, because he is allowed to have them. So Trump and former aides, in this article it says, have said that, well, the president, he had a standing order to declassify materials that left the White House's Oval Office and was sent to Mar-a-Lago. Because periodically, he was sending things there that he knew he wanted to have in his presidential library. That's what a lot of this is about. Every president starts to plan his presidential library. And they start picking out things that they want to send to it. It's things from the first year of his administration that he's not referring to anymore. It's like, oh, well, let's send it off and we'll start working on, you know, sorting out what is important. Every president does this. Anyway, meanwhile, Trump wrote in October on his now banned Twitter account that he had declassified some FBI related materials. I had read about this too, that he had a standing order. He had said this several times in several places. He also issued an order on January 19th, 2021 to declassify some FBI Crossfire Hurricane documents that the FBI protested, but they don't have the power. The FBI doesn't have the power here about presidential records. The president does. The FBI works for the president when he's president. The FBI is part of the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice is run by the Attorney General. The Attorney General is appointed by the president and confirmed by Congress, but appointed by the president. So he runs the show, not the FBI. As president, here in this article, this Brock guy who, let's reiterate, he was the former FBI head of counterterrorism center, National Counterterrorism Center. Okay. So he says, as president, he had broad, legally intimidating authority established by law and court determinations to declassify any and all documents and to determine what is and is not a presidential record, Brock wrote. Quote, Trump and his legal team have asserted that this authority was exercised while he was still president. Therefore, a violation of these fairly low-level and seldom prosecuted document-oriented statutes cannot be proven, end quote. So, in other words, this is a bunch of BS. This is a pretext to harass Trump and get him in the news in a negative light and build a case rhetorically that he is somehow, you know, some renegade against the holy sanctified liberal government of Joe Biden. It's just more narrative manipulation. So we're running out of time. I do want to cover Ukraine for a second, and that's just to touch on the fact that there is now, due to the – there's some there's been a crisis at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, which is near the front lines in Ukraine, and it's been being shelled. The Russians have occupied it, but the Ukrainians are shelling it. The Ukrainians are saying the Russians are damaging it or are causing it to be damaged by being at it. Anyway, they're accusing each other. There's fighting. And so now a UN team is going in to examine the claims and counterclaims of each side and inspect the plant. It's the International Atomic Energy Agency, and its chief, Rafael Grossi, said Monday that he is personally leading a team to inspect Ukraine's Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant, and he confirmed the UN-authorized team is currently en route following fresh shelling over the weekend. So the U.S. and Western allies have called for a demilitarized zone around the plant, warning that a potential Chernobyl-like disaster could occur if more isn't done to safeguard the nuclear reactors there. The Russian side, which has 500 troops occupying the plant since March, has rejected the idea of demilitarization, blaming Ukraine for ongoing shelling of the plant while inviting in the UN inspectors. So to me, this is just a way of blunting the Russian offensive, getting the UN involved so that the UN can have an expanding authority to take over a bigger and bigger part of Ukraine under the auspices of nuclear safety, and then the UN can start getting in the way and limiting the actions of the Russians, and then building the case for peacekeepers and NATO occupation of a big chunk of Ukraine to cut off any more Russian offensive without really having to militarily oppose them, just build a diplomatic case. And of course, attacking the holy sanctified UN troops would put Putin in a very bad light, which I agree. I mean, You know, some of these UN people are good people. There are some of them are horrible people. It depends on who you get. I'm sure this is a mixed bag where they've got spies in here that want to look around at what the Russians have and what the setup is, and they'll give all that intel back to the U.S. and the NATO and probably also Zelensky. And the Russians know it, which is why they want to be the ones to bring in the UN team. And, of course, they will try to limit what they see outside of the plant. I'm sure inside the plant they don't care because they're still letting the Ukrainian workers run it, and they're just controlling it. And again, it should be testimony. They're controlling the plant. They haven't turned it off. They haven't cut off the power to the Ukrainian homes. They're prosecuting the war because Zelensky doesn't want to have a treaty, and he doesn't want to admit that he's lost, or he's lost ground and end the war. He wants to continue fighting. So what are the Russians supposed to do? Surrender because Zelensky doesn't want to surrender? It's stupid. So, of course, they're not going to, you know, just – let the UN walk in there. Putin won't, but they'll let him inspect it and prove their case, prove that Zelensky is doing the shelling and all the stupid things he's doing at the behest of NATO and the US. Okay, so we're just about over. I wish I could have got to more stuff. There are some more interesting articles I'm going to publish on Dudes News tonight. What I do want to mention real quick is there was also a lot of shakeup in Iraq today, and it looks like there's been part of the Iraqi green zone where the U.S. embassy and troops are still – I know we're still in Iraq. They're being attacked by Muqtada al-Sadr's forces and other forces who – we don't have the full story yet, but it looks like some people have been evacuated. Some it is escalating. I mean, the latest report is that things are really ramping up. At least 5 people have been killed and 40 more have been injured in violent clashes that have erupted all around Baghdad's heavily fortified green zone today. And this was following an announcement that by Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr that he was withdrawing from political life because government in Iraq will not allow his candidates to participate in politics. So it's going violent. If politics fails, then you get violence. Okay, that's it. That's all the time we got. Thanks for tuning in, Liberation Nation. Check out Dudes News on Telegram, and we'll see you next time. Good night and take care.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the 4 most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number 1 is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number 2 is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number 3, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number 4 is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad